Okay, so let me talk a little bit about kind of how we're approaching this, and you'll get a little bit of a sense about how kind of Uber approaches problems generally. We're big believers in going after big, hairy, audacious goals. We call them big, bold bets. The sort of our tagline for our company value around big, bold bets is, if you're not planting the seeds for 5 to 10 years out, you have no company in 5 to 10 years. So this is kind of an expression. Elevate for us is an expression of that. And another thing we do is we approach problems in a first principles way. And Mark used that term in the video. And what we mean by that is we look at problems very deeply. We go to the physics, to the metal of the problem, as opposed to just sort of pattern matching and thinking about seeing what other people have done. So, for example, the fact that no one has cracked the code on urban aviation yet is not intimidating to us. What would be intimidating is if we couldn't make the physics work. And so we actually said, hey, why don't we look at helicopters as a starting point? Because it's possible that now that, because obviously ride sharing wasn't a thing until Uber ran at it and made it a thing, it's possible that you could do this with helicopters. Let's go look at that. And helicopters serve as a very concrete thing to kind of like, dig in and get data about. The answer we got to very quickly was no, we couldn't do this with helicopters, but they ended up serving as a really good foil for us to really understand what would be needed. The problems with helicopters, kind of where they fall down and for our needs here, first and foremost, they're too noisy. And we found that communities kind of have an immune response to the noise. Not every community in the world is this way. You can go to Sao Paulo, Brazil, for example, and there's a lot of helicopter traffic, and they just tolerate it. There's a lot of reasons for that. The need for it is much stronger than almost anywhere in the world. But the problem with a helicopter, the fundamental to the design, is you have this big top rotor that has to spin fast enough, doesn't have this retreating blade stall. And so you still have to lift on the retreating blade, so things got to be spinning fast. And the noise grows with the fifth power of the speed of the tip. And so you get a 30, if you get a 2x increase in tip speed, it's a 32x growth in noise. That's a big noise problem. You also have the tail rotor, you have the engine, all these things together, and all the kind of like harmonics that kind of interact between them create a really kind of unpleasant and very loud noise. There's a second aspect, issue with helicopters, which is safety. And the helicopters are significantly less safe than automobiles. And from our perspective, if we're going to introduce a new mass scale transportation, and let there be no doubt, we're not doing this to have it be some kind of elite form of transportation. It'll start as an Uber Black like thing, but it'll come down in price rapidly. And we intend to bring urban aviation to everyone everywhere. That's very much what Uber's about. It's just democratizing this transportation method. If we're going to bring a new method at that scale to the world, it has to be safe. I should probably pause when there's like large engines going by, but I can just talk louder too. So currently helicopters are about 10 to 15 times less safe than automobiles. We think that we have to bring, our sort of stake in the ground is they have to be at least twice as safe as automobiles in order to be something that the public will adopt and that we would feel good ushering in. And the reason that they're less safe, the reason they're less safe is because it's very sort of fundamental to design. They have a lot of mechanical complexity, these complex gearboxes to make kind of rotation of the blades happen at the right times and so forth. And they have a lot of several single points of failure. And these are critical single points, so if this thing fails, you fall out of the air kind of thing. And the design also is not friendly to like a ballistic recovery system, for example, but these rotors, these exposed rotors going on, you can't deploy a parachute very reasonably. That's kind of a fundamental thing. So we don't think helicopters are going to work on that dimension. The other thing is, from an efficiency standpoint, small turbine engines are about 25% efficient. Mark talked about distributed electric propulsion. I'll talk about more in a second. They're in the sort of mid-90s percent efficient. So you get a huge efficiency gain. And efficiency translates to cost. And I'll talk about that in a second. But they also don't, these turbine engines also don't meet local emissions requirements. Not to mention that, again, if we're going to be skating to where the puck is going to be, and if we want to feel good about what we're bringing to the world, we don't want to bring a new mass scale of transportation that is highly dirty into the environment, that is like polluting cities. But cities are also going to become less and less tolerant of pollution and less tolerant of inefficiency and sort of petroleum burning, et cetera, in the future. So we just don't want to focus on kind of where the past. We want to skate to where the puck is going to be. And so because of this, the sort of mechanical complexity and the safety issues, you have to, this is kind of number four, you get to this operational cost. You have to inspect the machines quite very frequently and tear them down frequently. And as a result, you have a lot of cost of maintenance. And you also have a lot of cost of operation because of the fuel cost. You just have a very inefficient system. You're less efficient in terms of using the rotor for lift during horizontal flight. And you're less efficient because you're using a turbine engine instead of an electric motor. And so all that together just makes it sort of disqualifies helicopters. So then you say, you already know the answer from the video, but you say, kind of, so what do you do? And what we focus on is this eVTOL design. And so what Uber's doing here is we're sort of speccing specing the mission and specing the vehicle to address that mission at the right level so that vehicle designers can go off and invent in that space. And these are kind of some of the characteristics. You're going with multiple distributed propulsors that are not used for lift during horizontal flight because it's a fixed wing design. And as a result, we can have much lower tip speed, so therefore much lower noise. There's very little noise from the electric motors, so that's also a good thing. So you're not getting these kind of like these harmonic interactions between these different systems. They're much safer by design because they have a lot of fault tolerance built in. For example, you can have redundant battery, redundant controllers, redundant rotors. You can lose any kind of component and still have full operational control and authority over the aircraft. They're fly-by-wire, which means just by the design of it, because you're controlling multiple propulsors, you have to do fly-by-wire. And as a result, the computer can keep the aircraft inside of its operational envelope and make things like transition flight very safe. These are the kinds of these considerations just reduce pilot kind of like operational complexity. And also, you can use a ballistic recovery system. So if all else fails, you can actually pop a parachute because you're not going to have the same sort of exposed top rotor type of situation. They're eco-friendly. These are all electric. There's zero operational emissions. The full life cycle emissions can be addressed over time, but by putting a zero operational emissions vehicle in the field, you make it possible to solve the full life cycle. And then the cost effectiveness and the efficiency, you get a 10x improvement over helicopters through the combination of fixed wing and electric power. And that means you can actually do a very cost-effective operation. And because we can do that, we can bring the price way down. I'll talk about cost in a bit, to the point where this is available to the masses. So what does Uber do in this equation? Here's a mock-up of what the app might look like. It's kind of funny. It's just the Uber app with a new option, Uber Air. And can you imagine how you'd feel the first time you run the app and you see that option? And you can say, like, holy crap, I can just push this button and like this aircraft is going to take me where I'm going in like 4 minutes. That's a pretty exciting concept. And we are very ambitious. We want this to be all over many, many points around cities, at airports, et cetera. So you'll fly into a city, you'll jump on an eVTOL, and you'll fly to your destination, like right in the core of the city. That's our vision. That's what we're trying to do. But what does Uber do here besides get all excited about it, right? One thing we do is we bring the demand side of the market. So I mentioned 65 million plus riders. We're growing very fast. By the time this is deployed, we'll have hundreds of millions of monthly active riders who literally will have this app in their hand and you're using it every day. So they can just literally push a button and get a flight, and there's almost no difference in the sort of behavior. It's hard to overstate how important that is. We also act as the glue that brings kind of the whole ecosystem together. So by having a very clear mission, we can define a very clear spec for what we need from the operations side and the vehicle side, et cetera, and we can then focus the ecosystem on solving that problem. And that's really a big deal. So we're giving confidence through the demand side. We're giving focus through this, this very clear mission that's a large-scale mission. So it's worth focusing on. It's worth building for. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about cost. This slide, I'm going to show you two different kind of pictures, kind of the near term. And by near term, I don't mean like day one. I mean like when we start getting to a little bit of scale of operations so that you start to actually have network effects kick in. What this is showing is the cost of Uber Air versus the cost of Uber X. And in the Uber Air case, we're talking about an Uber pool style. You're sharing the vehicle, but you're paying Uber X costs. You don't get your own vehicle, but you're paying Uber X costs. So if for example, we live in San Francisco, our office is in San Francisco, the Bay Area is like, kind of widely distributed, and there's a lot of very painful sort of up and down the, through the Bay kind of journeys, like the South Bay to San Francisco and vice versa. If you're you're okay paying the price of UberX to go to like from, you know, Mountain View, California to the San Francisco, then you would be fine. You'd be able to do it in Uber Air for roughly the same cost. But of course, you'd get there in like 10 minutes instead of like an hour and a half. So it's a game changer. I mean, it'd be obviously going to be very, very attractive. So that's what we're talking about in terms of the initial pricing. And we can do this because these vehicles move very quickly. So we're getting a lot of utilization. They're very energy efficient, as I was talking about. They're utilized from a network perspective such that we're, you know, it's not like a, just like car ownership versus ride sharing. Car, you know, individual car ownership, cars are utilized about 4% of the time. In ride sharing, at a mature ride sharing scale, they're utilized about 80% of the time. And so, you know, we can get these kinds of high utilizations that make the vehicle constantly perform. And load factor, meaning, you know, get as many people into the aircraft as possible. We think about four. And then there's small vehicles. And then low maintenance costs, as I mentioned. So that's kind of sort of day one-ish. And then the more mature picture, we believe our models show, and you know, and these are models, so like we have to actually go build this and make it happen, but this is what we believe is going to happen, is that Uber Air will actually get lower than the variable cost of car ownership. So through scaled manufacturing, because keep in mind that the amount of demand for this form of aviation will exceed pretty much everything out there, and that we've never been vehicles, never been aircraft manufactured in the volumes that we're talking about to address this level of demand. And so as a result, we're going to get to car type, automobile type manufacturing, and so you're going to see the cost of these vehicles fall dramatically, from moving from bespoke to highly automated manufacturing. We're also going to move from piloted to autonomous flight. So we'll start piloted, we'll run the autonomy software in parallel and make a kind of a safety case based on this software running for millions and millions of miles in the aircraft alongside of a pilot, and ultimately they become completely autonomous, and that'll save costs. It means you can put one more person that's actually a paying passenger on the aircraft and not be paying a pilot at the same time. And we'll get to decrease energy costs over time. That's just the trend line we're on, as solar, for example, becomes a bigger deal and other renewable energy sources, and then increase trip density. All this together gets to the point where it becomes economically irrational for you to drive your car versus flying. And that's a pretty exciting day. Like that's an amazing time, and that's when you're going to see just gigantic adoption. So much like I was saying with self-driving cars, we think this will happen in the air as well.